Hey, Bill and Gullen, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today again as we travel across the multi-universe to, or the multiverse rather, to talk about the different universes of law and legal realms and things like that here on right on Black Law Tribal Edition. Thanks to the National Indigenous Radio Service and, of course, our friends at Bumma Bipper Media, Crew Radio, 4K1G Townsville, and many others that take this program. Now, listen, we've been for the past few weeks now covering the United Nations Declarations of Rights of Indigenous Peoples, what we call UNDRIP. And basically, this is a continuation of that. I think we're up to about 37, 38. So we'll go out from there and refresh your memories a little bit. We've got Ganyara here with us to talk about that. And Ganyara, how are you going?
Good, thanks. It's warm down here. It's a bit cool up where we're coming from at present.
Yeah, the Tablelands, you know, there's a reason why people live up there, and there's a reason why people live on the coast as well. But let's start with UNDRIP Article 38. States in conjunction and cooperation with Indigenous peoples shall take appropriate measures, including legislative measures, to achieve the ends of this declaration. And I guess that's what, for the last couple of years, Australia's, I think, been having a go, really, having a crack at it with recognition, with a voice to Parliament, and sort of falling short every time because the solution or the remedy lies outside of Australia, not inside the jurisdiction of Australia.
You're dead right with that. And you'll actually notice in this statement here, this article, they say with the Aboriginal people. You just notice that one word with is in there, and they're not doing it to us. Yeah, they've got to work with us, and that means there's two lots to work with. I work with you, you work with me. There's two people, there's two things, there's two. So we're two lots. But it's to be remembered that we're not on the territory of Australia. They're on our territory. No ifs and no buts. So being in such a position, they really do need us, and they do need to work with us. Otherwise, we'll have to subject them to our law properly, you know, the proper way it's meant to be. So inside Australia, this like UNDRIP, for example, is a declaration. Even the human rights, you know, any of the covenants or treaties that are international, they're not part of the domestic law of Australia until Australia brings them into their domestic law through statute. Here, once again, this is saying that, yes, you will bring it in through a legislative measure. Bring a statute in so that whatever is contained inside UNDRIP, the international realm, is brought into your domestic law. And they are trying to have a go. Well, native title is a good one, Article 27 of UNDRIP. That shows exactly what they're trying to do. Article 28 is a bit of a difficult one for them. But Article 3, 4, 5, 8, yeah, we can go and do what we've got to do. They can't force us in. And this one here saying, look, the state must legislate now, bring statute in to ensure that we can do what we want to do in our world, which is not part of Australia yet.
Well, that's right. And I guess the reason why we're doing the UNDRIP articles is to remind people that it is the United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples. It's not the United Nations Declaration of Rights for Indigenous Australians. And it's very, very important to remember that. We'll go to, recently the Prime Minister made some comments about with Aboriginal people, not to Aboriginal people. We'll go there to the after we've done the articles, just to, I guess, have a listen to what he's saying there. Article 39, Indigenous peoples have the right to have access to financial and technical assistance from states and through international cooperation for the enjoyment of the rights contained in this declaration. That's a very interesting one. It doesn't mean, well, it could mean a number of things. There, you can take the money, or you can ask for assistance in maybe some of the architectural, electronic architecture and digital architecture out there to have your own means of subsistence, whether it's through a digital currency or something like that. Anyway,
it sure does. Now, just remember what I said on the previous article there. They're on our territory. They have deprived, and in most colonial situations, they've deprived the Indigenous people of a means of subsistence. And that's what they're saying. You must give them a hand now to get back on their feet. You've deprived them of their institutions, of maintaining it and bringing it into the modern-day realm. You know, that's the problem with it. So if you haven't got the money to build a government, you know, a parliament house, so to speak, how do you do it? And that's the sort of things, okay, Commonwealth of Australia, you belong to us. Get your people to organise the construction of a new Parliament House for your tribal nation, you know, for our lot here. These are sort of financial and technical assistance they can bring to it. They've deprived the tribal people of going to universities in their correct capacity, even though there are many, many very highly qualified Aboriginal people out there and Islander people. I mean, very highly qualified, going through university, getting to the top of the upper echelon of town. You know, this is big stuff. They're in Parliament even. Architects, managers, you name it, they're there. So they can do it. But they've been deprived of the ability to incorporate their world into the Commonwealth of Australia, or the Commonwealth of Australia into their world. It doesn't matter. They've been deprived. So give them a hand with this. That's what Australia has to do. It's the state. It's just been this ongoing occupation, this belligerent occupation of the territories of the tribes, trying to get steal the membership away from those tribes and keep them in Australia so this doesn't come to see the light of day. It's really sad.
It is a bit of a predicament. And let's go to Article 40. I was just going to read that here. I've got it here in front of me. It's... oops, I've gone to the wrong page. Oh, there we go. Indigenous peoples have the right to access and to... and prompt decision through just and fair procedures for the resolution of conflicts and disputes with states and other parties, as well as to effective remedies for all infringements of their individual and collective rights. Such a decision shall give due consideration to the customs, traditions, rules, and legal systems of the Indigenous peoples concerned and international human rights. Now, this is a big one. And I say it's a big one because I can imagine if there was an equivalent of an international court of justice where the tribal nations on this continent that people call Australia agreed to hear matters where they may be injured or have injured the Commonwealth of Australia by or to the Commonwealth of Australia. So, or any other entity, be it foreign or you know, neighbours, etc. So this is pretty massive, but in saying that, it's going to take a little while to also get these things in place, but there's some good news around the corner.
There sure is, and I was actually just going to save it for a bit later in the show or the next show, but I was party to the initial draft statutes of the International Indigenous Courts of Justice. It was a massive document, you know, coming together, a big effort by all that were involved. The first draft is there. This is the equivalent of the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, to which the members of this international sphere of law, which is the UN members, that's where they participate. And now the Indigenous peoples have every right to do this. In saying that, where is the place of decision, fair decision, inside the UN, inside the Commonwealth of Australia, for those who have been excluded from Australia, those who do not hold nationality, do not hold citizenship, do not hold anything within Australia, and their lands are actually occupied by Australia. So where do they go? Do they go to the tribunal of the Commonwealth of Australia? Hence the reason why it's very hard to get any good decision or any sound decision out of those courts and tribunals, is because you'll actually fracture the skeleton of law that makes those tribunals. You'll break the Constitution, for example. That's why in Mabo, they said, we can only go so far. We can't actually go any further because we'll destroy the Constitution, which destroys the courts, which destroys the evidence.
Now, the only way to have, a full picture of justice in the world of statutes and stuff is for the tribal nations to develop this other half of the puzzle, because... there are certain rules and regulations and law within the Commonwealth inside the Australian jurisdiction, but like you said, because they can't see past the Constitution that created them, there needs to be this other piece, and I think this is a sensible one and a win-win for everyone, because like you said, there's 7 billion people on the planet nearly, and it's a little bit of a challenge to keep a tabs on who's who in the zoo. Make sure the people are, you know, yeah, coming into the territory have got good intentions and not there to run amok.
And that's the reason why. Hence, the reason why we had the Indigenous nations have to construct this IICJ, this International Indigenous. Because you got to remember, our nation, our Yidinji nation, is not part of the neighbouring nation, Kuku-Yalanji, for example. They have similarities in appearance, the people, the men, the women. But it's a separate nationality, just like France and Germany. Now, these are two neighbouring nations in Europe, in the international sphere of law, the UN international sphere of law, that are very close to each other. They're neighbours. You know, there's a line on a map, virtually a line on the ground that says, well, on this side you're French and on that side you're German. So you see, it's the same here. We have to create it. And bear in mind that the Australian citizen cannot go into the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, on his own. He has to be represented, and you're represented there by the state. And if you look at that, it's, I think it's about Article 35 or 36, somewhere around there, of the statute, and Article 42, that they do say this. You have to be represented by the state is your representative, and that is the Commonwealth of Australia. And France and Germany, if they got a dispute going on, the matter is between the two parties are France and Germany, not the citizens of France and the citizens of Germany. It's an international actor.
Yes, it's all wigs and gowns and everything else. And, yeah, I guess if you're carrying the identity of those UN member states, then, of course, the authoritative bodies of those, organs of those states should be represented and should represent their citizens in various matters. And you see that with Australia, with the whaling stuff and and other things around the planet. I thought Article 41, let's go into that one now. This is an interesting one. The organs and specialised agencies of the United Nations system and other intergovernmental organisations shall contribute to the full realisation of the provisions of this declaration through the mobilisation, inter alia, of financial cooperation and technical assistance. Ways and means of ensuring participation of Indigenous peoples on issues affecting them shall be established. It's a bit of a general one, but what does that mean to you?
Well, they've set up a lot of stuff. And you look at the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. That's one of them. But it's also the persuasion, you know, that UNDRIP come about. You know, this persuasion of Australia, you signed up for this. The US, you signed up. This UNDRIP, this very document, is all part of that. And the UN is contributing. They understand that they're only holding the place in trust. They're administrators in trust, waiting for the tribal people to come back from a period of decolonisation. And that's probably the biggest, that's probably the easiest way of putting it. It's a big task. The world had been basically colonised by the Central European nations, you know, the British, the Germans, the Spanish, the French, the Portuguese, the Dutch. They went out, spread across the world, and they actually displaced or dispossessed a lot of country off a lot of Indigenous peoples. And the Indigenous peoples are, if you have a look at the definition in the UN, they don't have a written one, but they've got a fact sheet that says it's basically those who are pre-colonial or pre-settler nations that were occupied by, you know, you're separate and distinct from the settler or colonial nations. So they've got it worked out who's who. And the only way they can do is once you are going to decolonise or go back to where you come from, you know, the British were supposed to go back to England, they had to leave it in under administration until the Aboriginal people worked out who they were and come back in their full, true and correct capacity. Sadly, at present, they're still all wanting to be Australians, you know, act within the state under Article 5, you know, take part in the life of the state. They say choose to do so. If they realised that they had this other world to go back to and rebuild, and I was actually only talking to one old bloke yesterday about it, and it dawned on him. He said he'd never thought he'd live to see the day where he could do this. I said, well, you've always had it. You just were too busy trying to be in Australia, trying to be in something that excluded you. So the UN is actually bringing it about through UNDRIP, through this permanent forum. Australia is bringing it about. So they understand what's going on. They know. They know what they've got to do.
And there's so many other ones that we could mention, like the ACAO, which is the International Civil Aviation Organization, the one that I guess has this uniformed compliance with standards in aviation, passports, passenger movement, through to the type of bitumen that's used on the landing strips and stuff like that. So there's got to be so there's a million and one things there, and I guess it's very helpful to have that apparatus working for the Indigenous peoples. It's just a matter of taking control of and forming government and actually using it to your ability. It's like a, I guess, an instrument, a compass or a boomerang or whatever it is. It's just a thing you can use, but you don't have to. Article 43, the rights recognised herein constitute the minimum standards for the survival, dignity and well-being of the Indigenous peoples of the world. If these are the minimum standards, what are the maximum ones? That's what I'm interested in.
Well, you're right with that. They can't dictate to us what are the maximum standards. This is the bare bones minimum. This is to get ourselves established again. This is there as the stepping stone, the first building block of the nation. So they can't tell us how big we can have the nation or how advanced we can be or how far we can go with our laws. This is the minimum. That's what I'm saying. We're not of the UN. The UN are the member states that are holding the earth under trust, in trust, under administration, waiting for us to come back and do the right thing. And I see this everywhere. Everyone says the UN is a big, bad ogre. It's not. If you're in there and you're blinded by what this document is saying, you know, you can't see what it's saying. It is a big, big bad ogre. You've got nowhere else. You've got nowhere to go. But it's saying here that every Indigenous nation has every right to bring back its people, bring back its diaspora, bring them back into your fold, to recreate everything for them. But they're all too busy wanting to be a member state of the UN and oversee the administration of the territories of other Indigenous people. So the white people here in our part of the world, we actually consider them part of us. You know, we don't want to be black and white. We consider them to be Yidinji. But there are those who might have German ancestry. There are those who might have British ancestry. And this has been the problem inside the Senate or the Constitution recently with these MPs getting thrown out left, right and centre. I think there's another three or four out again. You know, it just goes on and on. They have rights. Like there's some that had rights to go back to Britain. Why didn't they? Why didn't they go back over there and revitalise their tribal laws just like Yidinji's doing here? They have every right to it. They've just done on our country and they're trying to bring about, you know, changes here. Sadly, we're the tribal nations that have the right to do this under UNDRIP, and this is the minimum standards. It's there. It really is. It's just that, and we can do this. We just got to keep doing it. They can't stop us from doing it, and this is where our absolute authority lies, is when we get back into our world of self-governance. You know, it's all about looking after the place and looking after each other. It's not about being greedy and getting it all for yourself. There's everyone else to think about.
Yeah, I think people might get the wrong idea sometimes when they're talking about sovereignty and, you know, Bentleys and golden taps on golden 747 airplanes and private jets and things like that. I can tell you now, it's far from it. If you're interested in that, then go buy a lotto ticket or go work your socks off. Because that's probably the best way you'll get it, if that's what you treasure. Article 44, all the rights and freedoms recognised herein are equally guaranteed to male and female Indigenous individuals. I know that there is people talk about the salary gap between men and women in the Australian realm, and you know these are real issues there. But how do these Article 44, what do you make of that one?
Well, first thing you notice, they didn't mention persons, they're individuals. These are men and women. Now, before God's eyes, all men, all women are equal. You know, men look after the women like you'd look after yourself, so to speak. Do the right thing if you are that way. You know, what gives a man more right to be dominant over a woman or vice versa? What gives a woman more right to be dominant over a man? There is none. We're all equal. We come and we go. So this applies equally. Now, remember, this applies to the man or woman that's holding the citizenship or holding the personality or whatever. And as you said earlier, you know, just there, that there is pay gaps, there is all this sort of stuff. There's gaps in colour in Australia, but this is in person. But now we're talking about in man or woman. All men or women are equal. There is no ifs and no buts. But when you get into the capitalistic world of money and that, there is inequality. You know, men say, I'm smarter than you, and I earn more money because of my, you know, my risk taking or whatever it may be. Or women say, I may earn more than you because I'm better at this. No. We're all equal on the earth together. We come, we go. And God said, "Use lot, share it, you kids, and don't destroy the place." So it's basically just, it is. This doesn't preference men. The UN cannot preference men more than women, or vice versa. So as they say here, this is for everyone. Everyone.
Article 45, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. Thank you for your company. How are you going? I hope you're enjoying this program. We're on the National Indigenous Radio Service, and we're talking about the United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I guess from a tribal point of view, not an Australian government employee or agent point of view, which is what probably many people have heard. If anything, they've heard about UNDRIP, they've probably heard it from the Human Rights Commission or an Australian body or an Australian person or a UN member state person talking about it. Article 45 is good because I guess if there are people who are looking to... the term might may be used to sell out. This one's a really good one. Nothing in this declaration may be construed as diminishing or extinguishing the rights of Indigenous peoples have now or maybe may acquire in the future. I think this is for the future generations. It's always going to be there. And no one can sell off these birthrights collectively before other generations are born, which is a really good, important thing because it's there and designed to protect people who may want to do that, whether it be on purpose or not.
Well, you're right with that. But also remember one thing. Remember, we're not part of the UN world. We were excluded. So the two jurisdictions haven't met yet. There's no common meeting yet of the minds to the tribe to subject itself to any of the UN stuff. And then, even then, they can only subject themselves as equals, as states, so to speak. So the tribe is always going to be separate. The Indigenous tribes are going to be separate to their government. Their government is going to be equal to the government of Australia, for example. And then the government is the representative agent in the UN. So they can't actually give away the place. They can't sell it. There is nowhere that I can find in any tribal law that says that you can sell your land to some foreign lot, sell your birthright of the future generation to someone else. It used to be conquered. Used to be done under war, acts of war, but since 1945, conquest is no longer acceptable. And even then, that only applies to the UN member states. But the UN member states are there to stop the warring factions, the warring tribes, from killing each other out and taking over each other's territory. So this is what it's all about, is maintaining peace and harmony on the earth and maintaining the future generations forever and a day. But what we've got to do is come back. We've got to come back to our true and correct capacity. The only way that anything can be extinguished is if everyone eventually abandons their original law, abandons it completely, never to be revived, never to be remembered.
No original place names, no original titles, no native titles, nothing like that.
Yep, the whole lot's gone. And then you've effectively done it yourself, not the UN.
But the problem is, though, I don't think it'll ever go because the UN keeps records of these things. So because it's recorded, it's actually talked about, and there is that constitutive theory of recognition now where you talk about something, it means that it exists.
It must be there, and that's what Native Title does. Article 27 of UNDRIP says that they must go and document these laws, they must go and get it in place. And I hear all the time the Aboriginal people say, "I'm not giving my law up to Australia." No, you're not. What you're doing, you put it on record in their world that you do have law. You're putting it on record, on their record, not yours, on theirs, that you are there, that you have all these laws, you have all this ability to self-govern, to look after yourself. And that's what brings it about. So it's one of those things, you think you're going to sell out to the world, you know, to the UN world, you're not. They can't take it away from you. Mm. They can't force you to assimilate. The only thing that can get rid of your territory, your law and your stuff is yourself. Simple.
Well, we're going to move on to the last few now. I think this is the last one. Article 46. It comes in two parts. Here we go. Part one. Nothing in this declaration may be interpreted as implying for any state, people, group or person any right to engage in any activity or to perform any act contrary to the Charter of the United Nations, or construed as authorising or encouraging any action which would dismember or impair totally or in part the territorial integrity or political unity of sovereign and independent states. political unity. That's a very important one. Number two, in the exercise of the rights enunciated in the present declaration, human rights and fundamental freedoms of all shall be respected. The exercise of the rights set forth in this declaration shall be subject only to such limitations as are determined by law and in accordance with international human rights obligations. Any such limitations shall be non-discriminatory and strictly necessary solely for the purpose of securing due recognition and respect for the rights and freedoms of others and for meeting the just and the most compelling requirements of a democratic society. Part 3 of Article 46. The provisions set forth in this declaration shall be interpreted in accordance with the principles of justice, democracy, respect for human rights, equality, non-discrimination, good governance, and good faith. What does paragraph 1 or Article 46 part 1 mean to you, Ganyar? We'll go through them individually.
Well, Yidinji is probably the best reflection of this one here. We were never part of the Commonwealth of Australia. We're excluded. And that's why we come forward offering a treaty to Australia. We're actually not trying to dismember Australia. We're trying to give Australia validity at law to be on our country, to be here, to be the representative agent at the UN level of the Yidinji people. Remember, we were being excluded out of Australia. We are unrepresented. We were excluded from being represented at the UN. We're saying, look, enough is enough. We want to be able to have a say in the world, because that's what it is. We're in a small globe together, and what happens in China affects us here. It may not be straight away, but, you know, the pollution is building up, for example. Let's just use that one, the garbage pollution, the plastic at sea. They throw something out in China. Eventually it goes around the world a few times, ends up here. Or we throw it out here and we affect them. So we are all on this place together. So we're trying to bring the world together by bringing Australia together, so we can have a say at the UN saying, look, your junk in China is affecting us here, or our junk here is affecting you there. So this is what it's all about. Yidinji is probably the best way of putting this one part here. We're not trying to dismember Australia. We're trying to bring it together and get it together and give Australia validity.
And I think that's what the respect and recognition is also, that there is a system there that other people use that aren't don't have consent to be in our territory yet. So we don't want to really hurt those men and women either in terms of you know, potentially damaging or hurting the Commonwealth, because it sort of works in a funny way. But the missing ingredient is the tribe and its authority and a representative body that reflects that. And that's what Yidinji, the sovereign Yidinji government's all about. What's part two of that? What do you think?
Well, in saying that, we respect the rights of all humans on our territory. We really do. That's why we consider them to be part of us. You know, they were born here. They don't know what's going on. We're trying to educate them as to what's going on and how we can move this thing forward to ensure that they have their rights protected. Yidinji people weren't the savages that the world made them out to be. You know, they weren't headhunters. They weren't all this stuff. They weren't dictatorial. They had governance in place. They were democratic. So the older people, the elders, had the ability to protect the youngers who were uneducated and, you know, weren't wise. Yeah, they'd do crazy stuff. And they had systems of dispute resolution. You know, it might have been punishment or whatever. But they also, as the old people, also protected those young people. And, you know, if the young people had a concern, or the disabled or the impaired or the elderly, the real old people had that, something was affecting them, they'd talk to their representative body, which was their tribal council of elders. They'd talk about it, say, look, this is really hurting us, it's affecting us. This is democracy in progress, in process. It's working. It's there. This is how it works. That's what they're saying. We got to respect each other. They say, look, the men must, you know, look after the women. Women must look after the men. They look after the young people. Look after the old people. Look after the impaired, the disabled, whatever. We did. We absolutely did until recently, when we were being deprived of everything, including all our resources, to be able to do so. Who feeds the young baby, for example? The older parents. So it is about protecting everyone. We've done it. We want to do it. We're going to keep doing it. There's no ifs and no buts about it. So all Australians in our territory are protected by our law, our ancient old law that's always been here.
Well, there you go. That's a comprehensive review of the articles, the 46 of them, from the United Nations Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples. But earlier we spoke about, I guess, that Australia is trying to take these legislative measures to sort of adopt this into their world and make sure that the tribal nations are given some sort of respect and recognition if they so choose to actually not participate in the state or to do both, up to them really. We're going to go to an interview that was recently played on Radio National, Larissa Berendt, Speaking Out program. She's talking with Patrick Dodson, who Australians call the Father of Reconciliation, Bill Shorten, and let's take a listen to this.
This past week marked 12 months since the Uluru Statement from the Heart was delivered to the Prime Minister and opposition leader Bill Shorten. The key proposition, a constitutionally enshrined Indigenous voice to Parliament, was subsequently dismissed by Malcolm Turnbull and the Coalition. But Mr Shorten has thrown his support behind the proposal, and so has Western Australian Labor Senator Patrick Dodson, and they join me now. Thanks for joining me.
No, it's great. Thanks. Good on you.
The national debate on constitutional recognition has culminated in the Uluru Statement. Bill Shorten, you've said you support an Indigenous voice to Parliament. What does that mean in practice?
It means in practice that we will work with Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians on the design of it. I have Senator Dodson here with me in the interview, and the Joint Parliamentary Committee has been out talking about what a voice might look like. I'm prepared to legislate a voice until we get to a point where we can put it up for a constitutional referendum, but we're not going to give up on it.
The other aspect, of course, around National Voice is National Congress, which has had its funding cut. If you were in government, would you restore funding to the National Congress?
We will support funding for National Congress. We haven't finalised the amount that we would give. There's no doubt in my mind that if we want to consult with Indigenous Australia about decisions affecting First Australians, then we have to empower their representative organisations to be part of that process.
Senator Dodson, the Uluru Statement has put calls for a treaty firmly back on the national agenda. What's Labor's position?
Well, Labor's up for the discussion about that. We're going to Barangaroo for the 30th anniversary when we first heard the Prime Minister of the day talk about a treaty. So we're certainly encouraging the states and other places to pursue their agendas with the First Nations peoples, but we're up for that discussion, and we'll work it out as we will with the First Nations peoples when we're in power.
Senator Dodson, of course, you've been involved in the long conversations around recognition of Indigenous people in the Constitution. Where do you think that issue is at the moment?
Well, at least it's in the Parliament. It's in a joint select committee that's looking at this. It's co-chaired by myself and Julian Lesser. We don't intend to repeat all the consultation that was done under the dialogues that led to the Uluru Statement, but we need to make sure that experts in the law on the mechanics of how this would, what it would look like, what words that may be entertained for a referendum, what that would look like, etc. So that committee will report, have an interim report in July and a final report in November. So the work will consider all that was done from 2011 onwards. That's the expert panel's work, the joint House committee that existed then, and the other work that's gone on with the referendum council, and obviously the matters that have come from the Statement of the Heart from Uluru. So those matters are all in play. The government has put an additional clause in the terms of reference to look at how consultations occur by governments today and whether that is sufficient and whether it's leading to greater self-determination or greater economic prosperity for people. So there's a complex set of terms for the committee, but it's working.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that one. Bill Shorten, since Kevin Rudd's apology in 2008, the number of children being removed from Aboriginal families has doubled. This is a state and territory issue, but leadership can be shown at the national level. What's Labor proposing to do about it?
Well, you're right about the number of children being removed from their homes has doubled. In 2017, There's 17,664 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children who are living in out-of-home care. That's compared to about 9,000 a decade ago. Whilst it's a state issue, there should be national leadership. We've committed to a national summit about First Nations children within the first 100 days of getting elected. We can't have a new stolen generation by other means. And what we need to do is to bring everyone together to focus on how we can make sure that if families aren't coping, we can help keep the families together rather than giving up on the families and giving First Nations children a lesser outcome than other children.
Senator Dodson, how important are the Aboriginal community-controlled organisations in addressing issues like the increasing number of children in out-of-home care, and what will Labor do to support that sector?
Well, I think the focus point has got to be on how First Nations work with their communities and through their organisations, but it also has to be on the families, as Bill said, and what supports the families require, because I think they're the missing equation. Families need a lot of support in this situation, and they've got to carry their responsibilities, and they've got to be enabled to carry their responsibilities. I think some of the punitive measures that are currently afoot certainly aren't helping that. But really, it's got to be a combination of both, and how the strategy and the practicalities of the day-to-day issues, again, is we'll be listening closely to First Nations to advise us on that. And building on some of the good work that they're doing currently, you know, the women at Tungandjira, for instance, are out there on the streets. They're trying to do something about domestic violence. They're trying to do something about the kids. But there are many challenges here, and it's not only in the juvenile justice area, it's basically in the family sector, and the families have got to be enabled to take their responsibilities.
Mr. Shorten, we've heard many concerns from the Aboriginal community about the Community Development Program, CDP, with many claiming it's too punitive and restrictive. What's your policy on this Work for the Dulls scheme?
I think it's clear that the CDP is not working. I think it's clear that it's discriminatory, it's too harsh. The number of breaches for relatively trivial matters are too high. It's effectively forcing people to live in poverty. We want to develop programs which allow for the creation of real jobs in our communities. So we don't accept the status quo, and we're going to work on real jobs in our remote communities. And underpinning that, and this is something which I've been heavily influenced by Pat Dodson on, is our whole approach across First Nations has to be one of partnership. But it's also got to be based on several core responsibilities. And I'm going to use these following values: honour, equality, respect and recognition. And so what we'll do when we form our solutions around CDP and reforms is look at those values.
Senator Dodson, will those reforms also mean looking at the cashless welfare cards?
Absolutely, and we've already been active in that space. We don't support a national rollout of that card. We don't believe the information in relation to its success is sufficient to even extended to Kalgoorlie. We're not supporting that process, and certainly no further out. So it hasn't proved to be the panacea that I think the government was trying to pretend it was, and that is having detrimental effects in many of these communities. So it's not the solution that people thought might lead to other changes. The whole wraparound service component has been lacking. The whole shift to enabling people to carry their responsibilities hasn't happened by the punitive measures that are in place.
Well, there you go. That was Larissa Berendt there. Thanks to the ABC for that, Radio National, which broadcasts using tri-wall spectrum around the planet. Yes. But Bill Shorten and Senator Pat Dodson there, obviously they have in their official capacity have sworn allegiance to the Queen of Australia when they took office. So they can only really talk about Australian matters, and it was very clear from that conversation they're talking about First Australians, non-Indigenous Australians and Indigenous Australians, talking about a framework within Australia to suit Australia. There is no mention of Yidinji. There is no mention of the tribal nations, it's all about voice to parliament, sort of looking at themselves in the mirror a lot, and I guess that's why we have said to Malcolm Turnbull, and we've written to him, and Nigel Scullion, look, well done on certain matters, and thank you for actually opening up a channel of dialogue. The Yidinji government doesn't deal with any Tom, Dick and Harry within Australia. it deals with the Prime Minister and Cabinet. And that is official. So we can safely say from experience and actually going there and conducting these meetings and dialogues with the Commonwealth of Australia that Malcolm Turnbull and his government are absolutely, I guess, doing their best in uncharted territory. I think, is that a good way of putting it, Ganyara?
It probably is. It's doing the best with what they have. That's probably the best. And what they have is very limited. Now, what Malcolm Turnbull said last year was that all Australians are equal. We can't give one group of Australian citizens, based on race or descent or heritage, more privileges, more right, or more anything than another group. Why don't they now give the Chinese Australians, the Chinese Australian citizens, equal right to the Indigenous Australians, whatever they want, if they call them? Now, I just want to remind you of what Pauline Hanson said at the Commonwealth Games, that she's an Indigenous Australian, and absolutely right. You know, as much as I don't support Senator Hanson's racist view, you know, the yellow hordes coming, whatever, I don't support that 1 minute. But what she said is correct. Technically, she is correct. That's why we supported last year the Commonwealth of Australia, what they were doing, and saying, look, we don't want to give any more rights to one group of Australians over another lot. Remember, we just talked about UNDRIP. It said, when you go back to your country, when you go back to your law, you have all this stuff. And this is the bare bones minimum, the absolute minimum that you have. Go back and you can create your world. Go back there, go and do it, but you won't get it in Australia. Now, UNDRIP makes it very clear that there's two things. You can bring back the life of your world whilst you retain the right to take part in what Shorten is on about, what Patrick Dodson's on about. You can take part in both if you want. But this is where they are lost in this wilderness of trying to bring about this racist, and it is racist what they're trying to do. Don't enter into that world of race, because the tribal people were never racist. They never considered you to be someone different because you were white or black or whatever. They never considered themselves to be white supremacist or black supremacist or anything like that. They were just part of the earth. They come from the earth, went back to the earth. They were part of it. That's what this sharing and caring is all about. So, you know, Bill Shorten, Patrick Dodson, be careful of what you wish for. That's what I say. Pauline Hanson, be careful of what you wish for. But when Malcolm said last year, Malcolm Turnbull said, all Australians are equal. They all have the same civic obligations and duties and rights and whatever else it is. They're all identical. Now, Australia does not have an Aboriginal history, believe it or not. When you think about it, they were never part of Australia. This is the white Australia policy. This is the racist white Australia. And when you join up to Australia, you become complicit in the intention of that constitution, which is the white Australia. This is the British. This is the outpost of the British in the South Pacific. That's exactly what was said in 1941. You know, so if you take part in that, you've got to be part of it. And that's why Australia doesn't have an Aboriginal history. They come and sat on someone else's country. And Australia started in 1901. It was already colonised. All the tribes were colonised or had been occupied at that time. And this is now what you sign up for in citizenship. This is what it's all about. The man, Patrick Dodson, may have dark skin. Bill may have white skin, but they're still being seen legally and politically through an Australian personality, an Australian ID, an Australian... you are being seen through the paper of Australia. And if you understand how law works... See, we're men and women. We walk around, we do stuff. We're just like kangaroos, bandicoots, or whatever. We just live here. But how do we make a law in our mind and attach it to someone else? This is all done in the mind of men and women. And as you take that identity, that Australian person, you are being seen legally and politically through it. You become effectively an organ or a cell of the organ of the Commonwealth of Australia. You become part of it. You bring yourself into it and you participate fully through that identity. But just remember one thing. We were excluded. We were never allowed in. And I bring this to everyone's attention on every opportunity I can. Where did the white Australia and its policies invite those who excluded to participate in the life of the state? Where did the Australians have a referendum to say, we invite those in that we excluded? we invite in the Aboriginal people. We exclude them. Have they agreed yet to let Yidinji participate, for example? Have they agreed to let Noongar participate? Have they agreed to let Kunjin participate? This is what I'm saying. This is how you change the intention of a document. It's through Section 128 of the Constitution that they hold a referendum, that they then can say, do we accept to invite in these other people that we didn't have here, bring their personalities in? You see, this is what I'm saying. So they've got to be careful what they want to construct inside, because it gets more divisive, and Yidinji is not it won't support a racist administrator, so to speak, of the territory to work with us, to consult and cooperate with us. We can't support racism in any way, shape or form. We've got to support fairness. And as it says in UNDRIP that they signed up for, you know, this is all about applying to the elderly, the women, the men, equally to the children. So if you're making now divisive, racist comments, be careful what you wish for. We can't support racism or discrimination in any way, shape or form.
Well, that's right, and I think that's quite evident from our recent comments, but not only that, recent comments, but the comments that were made years ago about everyone having a fair go on the Yidinji territory. It doesn't matter what colour your skin is. You know, thanks be to Guppy and Gayabara, our creator, for that, because it's the way we roll here. I guess one of the other things too that's really important to remind people out there, that this conversation is not really happening. If you're using Australian identity and Australian pieces of paper, the chances are you are subject to the conversation within Australia. And fair enough, you know, people can talk about Australia, but if you have the bloodline or the pedigree of a tribal society and you're from this continent, then you have every right to talk about it and to go back and set up your re-establish your government and reassert your sovereign authority that your nation possesses. So we're not saying it's for everyone, and it's actually there's a lot of work to do. We're not going to lie to you about that. But when you think it's about for the future generations, and that this is not going to go away until we actually do make that offer, and I think that's where we're heading with it, you don't want to leave it festering. Otherwise, you know, 150 years here becomes 500 years, becomes 1,000 years. People just will forget about it or walk away from it. And that's when it dies, I guess. But if it's fresh now, let's heal the wounds. Let's have some a remedy, a solution to the problem, a treaty or a formal agreement, whatever you want to call it. This is what it's all about now. And I guess that talking about treaties, there's a lot of talk about treaties. The Barunga Statement has been revisited again. I think the land councils in the Northern Territory, once again, it's coming from within Australia, talking about treaty. But until those people go back to their official capacities and their original law, then they may be chasing their tails.
Well, a treaty is between two sovereign states. That's as simple as it gets. John Howard said, as we keep saying, a nation can't treaty with itself. That's just a contract inside Australia. It's not sovereign authority being ceded or handed across or whatever, anything like that. It's not. Now, I was reading that article about the Central Land Council. Great try, no cigar. They are not a sovereign authority. Section 61 gives the executive the right to enter into international agreements. And as Professor Craven and Ann Toomey keep saying, if they're not done correctly, they're not treaties. And it won't, no matter what you want to call it inside Australia, it won't be another nation. It won't make the Aboriginal people a separate nation. They're just Australian citizens. And it won't make it a treaty. And it's just another white man trick. That's as simple as what it is. The Victorian treaty, the state can't do a treaty unless it's been authorised by the Commonwealth Executive to do so, to go forward and get that treaty organised. Now, once that's completed, documented, signed off, then they might have a chance of doing it. I see South Australia pulled out recently. No, we're not going to go any further with this. We've got more pressing issues, and that's absolutely what states must do. This issue of treaty remains in the realm of the Commonwealth of Australia, and it's the executive under Section 61. Nowhere else. No land council can do it. It's not a treaty. It's just another contract. It's just a, we'll let you, we'll give you some use rights of someone else's country. Because even those Australians do not, in that capacity as Australians, have any right to talk about the tribal lands. That's why you'll read the Note of Title Determination. The judge says to the Australians who come into the court seeking Note of Title, I cannot give you nothing. I come here today to give you nothing. This is the way that the Aboriginal people can prove ownership of their land. What a powerful statement. He said, I can give you nothing, but the tribe own the place. And you're in here as an Australian, so you own nothing. I'm going to give you nothing because the tribe still own the place. How can you give us anything? So land councils, once again, you're not doing it right. You're just making, it's just another white man trick. It's another beads. Well, it's not even beads. At least the Indians got beads of substance when they done the deal with the colonisers at the time. But what's land council going to get for the Aboriginal people in their true and correct capacity? Nothing. And that's the problem. It's a big issue.
You're listening to Black Lord Tribal Edition right across the planet today. And, I guess we're not having a go at land councils. They've got a role and a function, but they can't. You're right, they can't promise what they can't deliver, and there shouldn't be pressure on them to do that as well. They can't turn water into wine, so to speak. But they can certainly, with all the evidence and collecting of facts and stuff of the tribal nations and the law that exists on where the building is, then that's probably a function of Land Council, to help out with the native title process here and there. And but at the end of the day, it's not theirs, their world or their land. They're part of a world, and they're part of a land that belongs to somebody else, and that is the tribal nations. But brother, I think we're going to wind up. But what else is on your mind?
Well, basically what I was saying there before, and this really bugs me. Don't term it wrong. Get it done right this time. Look, we're grown up. We're adult. We're mature. We're big people. Don't treat the Aboriginal people like babies, like kids, like idiots. Whatever you do, Land Council. It's not so much that I'm having to go at them.
No, we're not.
But
We're trying to help them, actually.
I'm trying to say to them, yeah, absolute. Don't be leading these other people astray. Don't lead. You may be doing it unwittingly, not knowingly. It's to get this across that this sovereign ability that the tribes possess, that's been acknowledged by Uluru, that coexists with the sovereignty of the Crown, is where the treaty is done. Not some inside Australia. No treaty can be done within Australia. It's outside. No treaty can be done within one tribe individually either, by the way. Treaties are concluded by sovereign nations, these two states. One is Australia, one is, in our case, the Yidinji. No one can speak for our country. It's as simple as that. We will, through our representative government, talk to the Commonwealth of Australia about what happens on our territory. We're not going to go through Land Council. There's no way, because that's then you've got to be seen there through an Australian, and you don't have the right, as an Australian citizen, to be trying to conclude a treaty with the Commonwealth of Australia, as John Howard said.
Malcolm Turnbull's your boss. Indigenous Australia, you get used to it.
Absolutely right. And that's what you're trying to say. So do this correctly once. Don't make false promises. Don't make anything that burns the people again. They've been dispossessed of enough. They've been harmed enough. Enough is enough. Let's stop doing it. Let's do it right. And let's do it properly this time and make sure that what we create now can survive into the future, which is basically, we settle the past and we secure the future forever. We're growing up, we're adults, we understand how this works. So let's look after each other and do it properly this time.
And that brings it into Black Lord Tribal Edition for this week. And thank you very much for your company again. We hope you enjoyed it. And we'll catch you next week. But until then, Gai Baragalan Yundu, God be with you. And you take care and goodbye. Garu.
Garu.